On this week's episode of A Slice of Golf, we discuss whether we should stop being happy about just 30 points. We talk about whether the Olympics really matter in the grand scheme of things, and are Adidas and Nike about to go to war? As ever, this show is brought to you by me, Ben Fowlis.
Me, Chris Wright.
And me, Tim Williams.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome along to another show with me and the boys. It's been a busy weekend for us three. As much as we all run a podcast together, we still haven't played a round of golf together, but we were all out on the golf course at different times. Gentlemen, how are we doing, first of all? And secondly, Mr. Wright, first, how have you been? What have you been up to? And talk to us about yourself and Pops. Give us Pops Watch straight away.
Can I just say, your intros to this podcast, we just sound like a late night radio show. I just absolutely love it.
Intros are shite. That's
late night smooth listening.
I didn't say that. We didn't say that. We just said that, you know, maybe if this thing doesn't quite take off in the way that we want it to, you know, maybe go for a slot on like late night love or something on Magic. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm good, thanks. Got in a bit of golf last week. Went to the range on Thursday. Had another.
How's the back, first of all?
Yeah, back's a bit sore. I'll level with you. But as you highlighted off air, listeners, this was not a dig, but he did say, and I quote, "You're just really weak." So,
It's not words you ever want to hear in any context, is it?
Oh, that sounds really. I did deliver it with a nice kind of fluffy bow. I did kind of say,
as well as he's absolutely right. So I didn't take any offense to it. It is absolutely factually correct. So a bit sore today, but I am, 1 week into actually doing strength work, like proper strength work, mobility work, etc. So yeah, feeling good about that, which is good. Just nice to actually be doing exercise again, which feels good. Thursday range session went really, really well. Driver was just an utter shit show at the driving range. There was a guy next to me who was equally as bad, and we were just having a good laugh about how shit we were hitting the driver. So that was enjoyable. Then got to Putnam on Friday, and to be fair, Putnam's a course that you actually probably really shouldn't hit driver ever, and yet I still pulled it out of the bag several times and put myself into trouble. But scored
because of what reason? It's short or lots of dog legs or lots of trouble or
yes,
yeah.
It's quite a short, especially off the yellows. It's quite short. It's super super tight. Like there are even on the holes where you think, okay, I do need a bit of distance on this one. You're sat there looking at it going, but if you're even remotely offline, you're either in the trees or won't have a second shot. So it's just super punishing if you're not accurate off the tee. But I got a really, really good challenge. And there are lots of dog legs. There are lots of there's only one or two, one maybe like shot where you're like, I know I've just got to aim over that kind of way and I know it'll be roughly right. It was the classic of a couple of times I hit a driver, thought, yeah, that's going to be really good. Get up there and it's just like rolled off the fairway and into the rough, and then you don't have a second shot. And you're like, oh, if I just hadn't taken driver, if I'd just even taken 3-wood, I'd have been okay. So it was just, I felt like there's a lot of decisions, poor decisions on my behalf. But scored 31 points, which is a 1-point improvement off the week before. But if you remember the week before, I was like, I have no idea how I'd scored 30 points. And this time I know exactly how I'd scored 30 points because 31 points, because I scored 20 of them on the front nine, and then proceeded to have an absolute meltdown and fall to pieces on the back nine. So
did you start looking at the scorecard thinking, cool, this is a career day right now?
No, well, it was never going to be a career. Like even on the front nine, I was six over. So it was never going to be like a PB or anything like that. But I was just, and I was just like, yeah, I was playing okay golf. I wasn't playing, I wasn't playing 20-point golf. I had two birdies on the front nine. Can I just say, I had two birdies on the round. I only had one par. I had more birdies than I had pars on the round, which I thought was ridiculous.
Excellent. Good stat.
But my putting was on fire. putting was on the front nine. I think I had 13 putts. It was just, yeah. Nice. The two birdies came from putting the ball in the middle of the green and then just draining a relatively long putt. So, yeah, back nine, opened up a can of beer on the 10th. Very casual. Scored 1 point on the 10th. Can't remember which hole it was. There was a two ball behind us that were, well, there was actually loads of two balls out. It was Friday night. Everyone was obviously having a really good twilight evening. And we were probably the last group out that would, even if you played a quick round, you'd make a full 18. And the group behind us clearly knew that. And on one of the holes, they hit into me very accidentally. Like, there's a couple of holes where you tee off. You can't actually see the group in front if they're there or not. And I was like, oh, that's annoying. But fine, whatever. And then later on, I'm sure it was on like the 12th or something, they did it again. And again, they couldn't see me, not their fault, but it went really close. And I was just like, oh, that really put me off just before my shot. And then I was like, right, just quick, because I know the second guy's going to tee off in a minute. So rush my shot, hit the shot short, was annoyed at myself, walked up to the next shot, angry at myself, thinned the chip through the back of the green, now furious, storm around the edge, back of the green, get the wedge out, thin it back through the other side, now just... at, like, seeing red, and Ben just not laughing. He's at that point of, oh shit, Chris has actually just completely lost it here. Go back over, chip on, it was a shit chip, two putts, walk off with a seven or something. And I was just like, this. And that moment, that ruined my round. And I blobbed that hole. The next hole, I think I shanked one into the trees. And I was like, yep, this is mentally fragile, I would say, was how I was feeling at that point. And that's how I scored 11 points on the back nine. Just couldn't recover it from there. Kind of got a few two pointers, but yeah, just that. What was one bad shot led to the next six holes being shit, and that's all. I know it was that, and I know that's all it was. It wasn't. I was hitting the ball particularly badly. And the chips were rubbish, but in general, throughout the round, just mentally, just lost it. Fatigue set in.
Yeah, it's amazing. So that's what I experienced when was at Pine Ridge on for best ever round. It's amazing how like one bad moment can just set off two or three holes of just shit. And then you get to that end of the third hole and you're like, I didn't need to be there. I just didn't need to do that. Why did I do that? I was still having a perfectly good round. It was just one hole.
I could have just blocked that hole, walked into the next tee, completely refreshed, and just be 2 points down and be back to playing to handicap. No, instead of that, I could piss away another 7 points and end up on 31.
Therein lies probably why caddies are a thing, because yeah. I feel like playing with your mates, there's no way you're getting the advice that you really need to bring yourself back down to earth, whereas I think a caddy would probably do you some favours. Kind of talking about caddy and playing partners, how was Mr. Pops?
Yeah, I know that's really what everyone wants to hear about, Pops. Yeah, he is, again.
Is he secretly the star of this podcast?
Yeah, he might be. Should we do a guest appearance? Should we see if he'll come on one day and actually talk us through his journey?
If the people want him, let's get him on.
If the people want him. Yeah, what did he do? I think he also scored 1 point better. I think he ended up on 30 points. But again, I felt like he played much better. He's still four putted his way around Putnam, which is definitely his issue. Is it a fourth? I can't remember which hole. Decent-ish off the tee, a little bit right. Takes his hybrid out. And, you know, we all know Pops. He doesn't hit the ball a long way. He takes his hybrid out and he's probably still got 220 to the pin. Hits it over the back of the green, doesn't he? And I was just like, what has just happened? Part of me in my head was like, was that thin? What have you done here? How have you done this? He just struck it really nicely, put it over the back of the green, and then hit a chip, which I'm not joking, was one of the most powerful chips I've ever seen in my life. Lucky for him, slam dunk in the hole. If it hadn't got in the hole, I reckon it could be 60 yards down the fairway.
Yeah, you don't often hear powerful and chip in the same sentence, and it ever ending well.
It was probably a 20 yard chip. And it just went and the sound it made was like straight. that really needed to go in, but well done. Line was perfect. So he was delighted with that. A chip in for him, zero putts. And just generally, yeah, he's hitting the ball really well. I think one thing that was very, very relatable for anyone who's making quite major swing changes was by probably the back nine. You could see that front nine, he was thinking very, very, very hard on every shot, right? And you could see it. You could see he was paying, you know, a lot of attention to his swing and working really hard to maintain those new moves. And he hit a couple of shots where I was like, that was your old swing. Like the club was way back over his head again, and it was loose and it was wristy. And I was like, that was your old swing. And it was a crap shot. And he was like, oh, so my old swing coming back in. And I think it was probably just an element of fatigue and just not, you know, being able to think that intently for 3.5 hours or whatever it was.
Because
that's part of the skill of this game, right? Is when is the mental grind to get those changes into your game. It's practice, it's repetition and repetition and repetition. It's like muscle memory. It's like, you know, practicing technique or going to the gym and doing reps. It's the same thing, but so important in this game, but so difficult.
But what's more important, I'd say, for Pricey is that he, and I know he listens to this, and I know he's listening right now, please just go. I know you chipped in, it was lovely, it was fantastic. Outside of that chip in, the short game, the putting, I honestly think he scored 30 points. I reckon I don't know how many putts he took, but Pricey, please just go practice your putting. In fact, I'd say for the next 2 weeks, don't even practice a long game. Just go practice putting. Because I honestly think he could have been on 38 points. He puts himself into really good positions and then four putts. And I'm just like, right, you have to stop this. And he's like, he hits his first putt. And I'm like, he has hit that. They're quite quick greens. And he has hit it so fast. He, like, the second putt is like further away than his first. He's angry. He steps back up. It goes, I'm just like, you have to stop this. This is not okay. This is where you're losing shots.
Right. Well, we'll see if the proof is in the pudding. If he turns up to the big event in a couple of weeks' time with the Frey Bentzel slot and he absolutely pastes us and he's averaging 1.8 putts a round, we will see.
Yeah. Honestly, if he played the next 2 weeks, I think he would definitely have scored 36 points. He 3-putted, 4-putted his way around. Cool. He could save so, and I'm not even joking, so many shots.
Could be one to watch. Mm. Right, Timothy, talk to us, because you had a bit of a belter this weekend and still got beat.
Yeah.
not just beat, hammered.
Yeah. Hammered.
Yeah.
So it was my first round in 2 months at the weekend, which is nuts in itself. And very low expectations coming in. Although I felt like I've been practicing relatively regularly recently and having quite focused practice. There's a lot of focused practice around approach play, pitching, chipping, and then just embedding in a couple of swing tweaks. So I didn't really know what to expect. And my round was just an absolute roller coaster because there was just kind of a bit of everything going on.
Where were you playing?
So we played at Pedham Place over in Kent. It's the first time I've ever played there. Really, really enjoyed it.
It's a great golf course, isn't it?
Really enjoyable track. You do need to think your way around it, which is what I was told in advance, in that there are a few holes where you might think it would be good to take a driver, but you shouldn't take a driver, or you have to play the dog legs really carefully. Or there are some holes that will goad you into taking the tiger line on. The round itself was, there was a bit of everything. So couple of birdies,
nice.
Quite a few pars, two blobs, three lost balls. And I shot an 89 for 38 points. And I'm still amazing. Not completely sure how, because as I was going around, I was thinking, I'm really not playing as well as I can play, for sure. And I think it was mainly because I was really erratic off the tee, like super erratic. Just not striking it clean. I think I struck one clean drive my entire round.
When you say clean, do you mean like just not left or right, or do you mean just like it wasn't off the toe or heel or top or bottom?
No, I mean, there's only one that was like flush off the face. A few were kind of like very thin. I pulled a drive. But it was erratic, but not erratic in the sense that I think I lost one ball off the tee.
It wasn't erratic. It was just
not erratic, just not as good as I, without wanting to sound big-headed, as good as I think I can be with the driver.
We said previously your off the tee dramatically improved last year.
But the really pleasing thing was away from the tee, my iron striking, my approach play, my chipping, really comfortable and confident standing over them. And I think that's probably where it was probably a really, really good scrambling round, I would say, is how it felt. Nice. 29 putts in total, but that's with the two blobs. Okay. Bear in mind.
Okay, so there are no putts on those holes.
Yeah, so if you kind of pro-rata it, that would take me to about 32 putts is where I probably would have been. But still, really happy with that because I've been practicing putting, doing the par game on the practice green with putting, so that's worked. Something else, really weirdly, that I started doing about a week ago, just absent-mindedly, but it's massively helped me. Just want to lay it out there. So, as I've been saying, I've been trying to improve my chipping for ages, and the fault I have with chipping is, and I think this is common for a lot of people, is the tendency to probably get a bit nervous when you're standing over the chip, and probably on the way down towards striking it, I think a lot of people do this, probably clutching the club too tight, and all of a sudden before you know it, you've just thwacked it into the ground just behind the ball and dudded it. So I'm really, really conscious of that. So like a week ago, just absentmindedly, I don't even know why I was doing that. I was walking around with a wedge in my hand and just in the garden, and there was a load of leaves on the side of my garden. And for some reason, I just absentmindedly just started almost like sweeping leaves, a leaf off one by one off the lawn. And all of a sudden I thought, hang on, there's probably something in this, because every one of these leaves, I'm just kind of, you know, a bit of a swing and just striking all of these. I thought,
I'm just picturing you taking 3 hours to clean up the leaves that you told the missus that you'd be out in 10 minutes.
And so I just sort of took that thought process, and I went to the range on Saturday, and I just thought, just try something out.
I'm just sweeping up leaves.
Just in your head, imagine you're just like literally brushing a leaf off the lawn and into like the flower bed. And for some reason, it just really worked. I was like, bloody hell, all of a sudden I found like a thought or feel that works for me.
Who needs online coaches nuts. When you've got a garden full of leaves?
Absolutely nuts. Anyway, I digress slightly. I finished 89 for 38 points. Managed to lose out to a guy I was playing with who managed to shoot six over for 43 points, I think it was.
Like 44, I think. No, 46, I think he scored.
Yeah, maybe 46. And
was he playing off 16 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable.
On the way around, I was thinking it was one of those where quite clearly as we were going around, I was like, he's playing very well. And he's not talking a lot, which means he knows he's playing well.
Yeah. We all do that, don't we?
But you know, give him his due. It was kind of like, you know, he was dropping his approaches routinely like 5 foot from the pin.
Has he been seeing? Because he's not been playing that much, has he? Has he been secretly practicing?
This was also his first round in 2 months and hasn't been practicing a lot. So and I don't know where that's come from.
As soon as I saw the scorecard, because, you know, it pops up on the group chat and you see the first front nine, back nine, then the overall score. And I saw the big fat eight and a blob on hole two. And I thought, he's done very well to come back from that point to score well on the front nine. Then saw the back nine and was like, holy shit.
So what is he four? So he was four over on one hole and he scored six over total.
Correct.
Yeah.
Crikey.
And this is hole two as well, to keep the head in the game after
and then I don't mean after a Duffy chip.
I don't want to claim, you know, an assist in this, but we both blobbed. We both blobbed the second. I just played the second like an imbecile. Basically, he got. I think he just he caught his second shot. I think he caught it with the face open and put it into some deep heather and never found it. It was like the one wayward shot of the day I've seen. But I think so. We both walked off that green, having both scored a blob, having got off to a good set on first. And I think we both just sort of said to each other, "It's like that was funny. All right, let's just go on with it." So I don't know if that helped. It helped. It actually kind of helped me. Because it was almost like a bit of a shared moment. I was like, yeah, both it's perfectly possible and acceptable to be blobbing holes. Like, it's going to happen. Let's just park that and just move on and get on with it. And went from there. So, yeah, it was awesome. I'm sitting here very, very, very happy. I woke up this morning because actually the other guy I was playing with yesterday, believe it or not, on a Sunday evening we were doing some wine tasting because he's got his wedding coming up. So woke up this morning pretty groggy, I'm not gonna lie to you, but still kind of like also basking quite happily, reflecting on my round of golf yesterday, then obviously realized I had to get up and go to work. It was all good. Two things to mention. Way too many white flowers at Pennant Place. Makes it very difficult to see your ball from far away. White flowers should be banned on golf courses.
What, like planted or just growing? Like, were they in intentional places, or was it just like in the rough?
Dotted around in like the second cut and everywhere. And so you had to you'd find your ball, but it's like, just everything would be a lot quicker to find this ball, but these weren't many white flowers just dotted around.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And secondly was, I've never felt like I was so desperate to finish off a round because we were flanked by the most aggressive, apocalyptic looking thunderstorm I've ever seen in my life when we were playing yesterday. And at about the 12th, it looked like it was like the end of the world was about to drop on us. And I was just thinking, I know I'm scoring okay, and I really, 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 really want to finish this round. So how far would I be prepared to go if it did start, you know, raining, thundering, lightning? And I came to the conclusion that, right, until I've seen lightning in what I deem to be a nearby vicinity, I'm going to carry on.
Any lightning, you surely are like, the first time you see lightning could be the last time you see lightning if you're holding
on. I did see some yesterday, but it seemed quite far away. So I mean, back on.
So you are 30 minutes south of where I am, and I can confirm the apocalypse did hit East London and it was absolutely cats and dogs. And at the time I was kind of looking out the window thinking, well, I'm glad I'm not out in that. And then I saw the Instagram story and it was still fairly bright, and I was like, that's not too far away. It's heading in their direction.
I was ready to take on a thunder and lightning storm in order to finish my round yesterday. That's how kind of closely I was holding on to that round and that score.
Well played. It's good to hear the golf after 2 months off is there. It really is there. Kind of heading in towards the back end of summer now that we've got a smooth run to go out and play. And also, you know, got to give it to him. I give him a lot of shit when I see him, but big up to Johnny, because that is a sensational round of golf after 2 months off. And I know, you know, I've given him a lot for a while about him never having broken 80, and for kind of him to do it after essentially 2 months off, I think it's pretty awesome.
Amazing.
Big up, J-Dubs. Anything more, Tim?
No, let's move on.
Cool. I'll kind of quickly whiz through mine. So I played Ilford on Saturday. They still don't have my drive. We are hopeful for this week. That is now 10 weeks.
Wait.
You went all Dalek-y. We lost everything.
I haven't got a clue what you just said, but it sounds right. Like Dr. Robotnik or something.
Right. We are now approaching week nine. No, we're in week nine. Still don't have the driver back. So we are hopeful this week. Oh. Please, Ping, just send the shaft out to the shop. That would be lovely. So I can finally go and pick up the big dog. And kind of update from me, I signed up to T-Box last week. So you were going to be seeing a lot more footage of me using a TrackMan and getting in the simulators and stuff.
You know, last week we were talking about solutions for heat, and I said Ben's got the best one. I then never actually came back to what the best one was. It was that you had signed up to T-Box, so you could now play air-conditioned golf. I was like, that is the solution. That's the best one.
My problem is that whenever I'm around someone who knows a lot about golf, I struggle to focus on playing golf and just can't get out of conversations. So he started showing an interest in what we're doing with the golf brand and the strength stuff. And then I was talking about him playing, and all of a sudden 25 minutes has gone of my 1 hour slot. So it then very quickly turned into just spritzing some balls, get some feel back for Saturday. Felt pretty good. So I went 41 strokes, 18 points on the front nine, but felt that I'd played bang average, absolutely awful. I got through seven, probably about hole seven, and I just couldn't move. I was like, what's going on? Oh, you're here, went stiff as a board. It took me a few minutes to figure out that I went pretty hard in training on Friday and basically couldn't move. I felt so stiff. So I hit so many just tired, bad shots. So from there in my head, I was like, I know I'm scoring pretty well, but the physical performance is kind of tailing off pretty quickly. There's a lot of bad shots going on. I was just saving my ass when I got near the green. So I kind of accepted it wasn't going to be a career day. And also I was kind of privileged to, I don't think this has ever happened before. I'm pretty sure in saying this, I've never played with someone who it was their very first round of golf. Amazing. Ever.
Feels like a lot of pressure. Like you are
a lot of pressure.
You're taking their golf virginity.
Yeah. And that's where at that point I was like,
that's such a,
it works. It's good.
I feel really uncomfortable. I really feel really uncomfortable.
Sorry.
Oh God. So this is someone who he openly admits hasn't done a lot of sport over his lifetime. So naturally, you know, it's taken him a bit longer to get up to speed with it. I think he'd had 8 or 9 lessons now and absolute ton of range time at T-Box.
So 9 lessons and range time before getting out on the course. That's quite impressive.
Yeah. And that's where I said to him, I was like, we've got to get you out now. We've got to get you out. And because he's at T-Box as well, he was having like one lesson a week and then would practice twice in between. We got him hooked in April. He's done all of this since April.
Fully in.
So we stepped up onto the first tee and there was next to no one on the course, which was the first time in ages. So we pretty much, you know, we could play as fast or as slow as we like. I thought it was going to be a pretty slow day. And then lo and behold, someone has the very next tee time directly after us. So as they tip up, I was like, boys, do you want to go first? Because it's Darren's first ever round of golf.
It's his first time.
Yes. First time.
Be gentle.
And they were like, no, we're not in a rush at all. So they were stood on the tee box as we were teeing off. So not only was it me and two others there, there was a few other guys, and he stepped up and absolutely walloped a 3-wood into the fairway about 200 yards, got a genuine like round of applause from everyone on the tee box. Everyone was like, oh, well done. And then if for anyone who knows that hole at Ilford, it's kind of a very slight dog day, but you're playing into the smallest green in golf ever in the world. So it went a little bit pear-shaped from there. I think he ended up with a 7, but you know, not a bad start, first ever round of golf.
Yeah.
And then he stepped onto tee box 2, which is a par 3, and it must have missed the pin. It pitched about a foot short of the pin, missed the pin by less than a foot on its way past, and finished up 5 feet beyond it. Oh, me, all three of us were on the tee box as the ball was in the air, like, no, you can't. No, absolutely cannot. Second tee shot ever. And I was shitting my pants. I thought, he's going to slam this. This is going in. His impression of golf, he's going to walk away from this thinking,
this shit's easy.
What are you lying about? I would have been really happy for him, but I'm going to say I'm very thankful it didn't go in because I think I may have packed the clubs in and gone home at that point. So yeah, as I said, wasn't particularly great for me. But somehow, I mean, it's par 68, so it's not saying a lot, but I guffed my way to 84 strokes, 32 points, which is okay. But here's where I made up a lot of shots was my chipping and putting. 29 putts, which is, you know, pretty good. But chips, anytime I was around the green, I hit one bad chip, and that was because I was playing a shot I just shouldn't have played at all. It was ridiculous, playing down a ridiculous downslope. Tried a flop shot. There was not enough grass. The ball was sat on, thinned it, and that, needless to say, set the rage on. all in, five lost balls. And wow. this is how bad the long game was.
How you score so well with five lost balls?
Yeah, five lost balls. And this is where, this is how bad the long game was, and kind of highlights how good the short game was at the weekend. I hit 33% of fairways, dreadful, on a course where you wouldn't take driver. I mean, I took 3 3 woods all day. The rest are all irons. This is what I mean. I did not feel great. My body felt battered. I hit 17% of greens in regulation, which is paltry, which is really, really bad. Yeah, so...
really good.
It felt like bad golf, but then you walk off the course, you look down at the scorecard, and I was like, oh, well, I'm actually quite pleased with that, because it says that I've done something really well, considering I feel really, really shit. Yeah, all in, really good day. The weather held off, and I think it was actually perfect conditions for golf. It was dry, it was mild, the sun wasn't out, it was just kind of like the grey white sky, about 20 degrees. So all in, good day. We'll have to say, playing with two 36 handicappers, both brand new to the game, gets quite tough to concentrate on your own game, because you're being caddy, score counter, you're trying to be a coach, the rules official, not getting annoyed at them for talking, literally hit the top of my backswing and Darren started talking. So I was ready to fire. I was like, and I look back, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Shush. And then standing over a couple of putts, a couple of 2-footers as well, just here chatting, and you know, those stand back and you're like, come on, boys. But no, all in, good day. And I can't wait to get back out with them, because it was good fun. And to see, I think the joy of him, the nerves prior to the first tee shot, oh my God, he went dead silent for about 10 minutes and then nailed the first one, and then I think he was off. So yeah, that about wraps up.
Can I add one more thing? Because I think this might be quite useful. I've started reading, so in the room somewhere, a golf psychology book, one of the many classics, and what is it? Golf is not a game of perfect, or something like that. And it talks about time spent over the ball, like when you're in setup. And one thing that I noticed myself doing last week, I was standing over the ball too long, and I said to Pops this week when we're out, I was like, my goal this week, and I said it, I was like, I think you need to do this too. We need to not hang around over the ball. Like, just set up, take a look at the target, hit. And I got myself into quite, Ben, I know you're super into like the pre-routines, etc. And this was like, for me, was, I felt like I was hitting it better as a result. Literally step up, do my practice before, routine, step up, look at the target, look back down, hit it, go. Like, no pausing. And I've never really, like, you know, when you're sat there with someone and you're thinking, I feel like they're taking quite a long time over the ball here. Ben, and I think it was because, again, like I said, he was thinking about it more and more and more as the day went on. There was one point where I filmed him. He was stood over the ball for maybe, I think it was somewhere between 15 and 20 seconds. No movement, just sat there looking at the ball. And I was like, I said to him, whatever is going through your head in those 20 seconds is not good. Like, it doesn't matter what you're thinking about. Yeah. You've looked at the target. You've now looked down at the ball. Hit it. Like, just hit it. And I think he is now at the point where he just needs to trust it. And he just needs to go, right, look at the target, trust the swing and hit it, rather than thinking about it. Does that make sense?
It's similar to what we spoke about with James all the way back in episode 4, right back when we started or whenever it was. This is where it's worthwhile when you are at the driving range going through your pre-shot routine, so that when you're on the course, you just become so used to just going, right, here's my little routine. And I know on average, I take 3 seconds to hit the ball. So I will step in, stand there for 2 or 3 and then fire. Because yeah, like you said, you know, a million and one thoughts come into your head, and I guarantee not one of them is going to be beneficial.
No, and we spoke about it, and he was very, very aware of it as well. He was like, I know I'm spending longer of the ball, and we've talked it through, and we're like, are you just thinking about the million different swing thoughts? He's like, yeah. He's like, I'm just thinking about everything that I've been working on in my lessons, and I'm like, now, I'm so easy to say, isn't it? But now is not the time for that. Now is the time to just trust it and get up and hit it. And that's what I was really trying, me consciously trying to do as well. Just get up, look at the target, look back down, and just trust the swing.
Yeah, that was similar to the conversation I was having with the two boys at the weekend, because they're both very fresh off of lessons. They're obviously both nervous standing over the ball because it could literally go in any direction. And they would kind of take their time. They'd do their two or three practice swings, and then they'd stand over the ball and start adjusting and wiggling and doing this and doing that. And you could see that they were just trying to think about what their coach has been telling them to do. And I was just like, just go. Like, just kind of, the hard work's been done. And then there was also the conversation, similar to what you were saying earlier, I had to bring up with them, and I said, whatever you do, don't revert back to your old swing, because you don't want to revert back and go two lessons back from where you've just progressed from. Because they're like, oh yeah, but it's comfortable. I'm like, yeah, but that's not, that defeats the object of the lessons. I get we're here to play, and it's just about getting the ball up and down, getting it in the hole, but let's stick to the same swing, but just get on with it. And you can only say that so many times before they're like, well, I'm going to do it, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I took us off on a tangent, but just
right. All good. Gentlemen, we are now 7 months through the year, touch wood. We've now got a little bit of consistency. We've got a real good run through until the end of the year. Now, at the start of 2021, or some time ago, we started making predictions of what we wanted to achieve this year, what areas of our game that we were particularly weak in, some stuff that we wanted to improve in. Now, it's going to be a little bit difficult to actually compare where we're at directly, because we've not necessarily had loads of course time, loads of practice time, but bearing in mind where we thought we wanted to be, we're 5 months to go left of the year. Fingers crossed, we're now at a stage where restrictions are over and done with, so we can kind of play golf freely. Have you been reflecting on these targets? Where are we at in relation to these targets? Or do you have any new ones kind of for the remainder of the year that you want to really work towards, knowing that we've got a pretty good run to go? Christopher?
Yeah, so mine were improving short putts. I don't think that means to say short putts. I think it's just improving putts per round, getting them down to 32, 31. I feel like I was on track with that on the front nine. I think I hit 32 putts total. Fairways hit, I definitely didn't meet that target this week. And I think that was due to poor decision-making, approach play, not missing short. That, I, apart from a couple, looked at my stats. And I've been paying attention to stats. I'm now tracking, like when I'm playing, I've just actually started tracking where I'm missing the approach shots. And I am missing more left, right, long, rather than just short the whole time, which is good. But yeah, I think for me, for the next however many months we've got left, I think is getting a level of consistency, not volume. I think stage of life with a kid, volume amount of play is always going to be a bit limited. But I think quality of practice, I think, needs to be my focus. I think whether that's 1 week do long range, and I always take some time aside for practice each week. It's just a good like me time. But I think do like one week do long game, next week do short game, rather than I'm just doing too much long game is my feeling. So that's really going to be my focus, get some consistency with that quality of practice. And I think then the goal for me would just be to get back into scoring in the 80s, but I don't know if that's going to happen with not playing as much. Now scoring kind of 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. Whereas a year and a half ago, it was just, if I was high 80s, I was annoyed at myself. And I'm not annoyed, I can understand it. Like, I'm playing less and whatever. But I just want to be like, know that I can go out there and hit sub 90 and be confident about that.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty solid.
That's it.
Really. Timothy?
Yeah, so I think the ones I wrote down earlier in the year were to improve my putting and my approach play, which, as I said earlier, I've been quite diligently practicing for the last month or so now. You know, it's a staple of any range session I have, that I reckon if I get 100 balls out, I reckon maybe 40 of those will be a combination. Well, 40 of those will be to distances of 90 yards and less, basically.
Yeah.
So that we're talking about lob, full lob web, what lob wedges.
Lob web.
But basically just practicing pitching and approaching to different distances really, really consistently. And this is where if you've got a range which has got the multiple kind of flags laid out and target distances on them, or you've got a pro tracer range which has got the distances out on the range, just use those hammer them. That's what I've been doing. I've been like trying to hit like what to one flag consistently, which is like 75 yards. It's like, right, 10 shots, and you have to get that within like the circle that's on the monitor. You have to, and you don't move on until you get that. So really diligently working on that. And I think the way my confidence of playing those shots on yesterday was a lot higher. So I think that therein is something. As part of that, on par three scoring improvements is a massive target for me. I think I'm right in saying that we did a podcast earlier in the year, and we actually said that potentially par threes are where a lot of people tend to leave the most of their shots, not the long par fives. So I've really had that motivation to try and like, right, par threes, I want to start really, really nailing par threes and scoring well. So that's important. In terms of new targets, I'm not massively one forever sort of saying, oh, I want X number of sub 90 rounds, or I don't think you can work like that personally. But I think for me, it's just maintaining consistency, but consistency at a higher level than I was willing to accept before. And what I mean by that is previously, if I shot 30 points, that was a job well done for me on the day. That was like, okay, that's job done. Refusing to see that as an acceptable score now is what I'm going to move towards.
Interesting. That. So what's your new acceptable score going to be? I like this.
An acceptable score for me, I'm going to just progress up a little. I'm going to say 30, 33 and above now. I think 30, 33 is probably minimum. Is, you know, I'm not saying that's what I'm going to hit every round, but I'm now going to say for me that the mindset of going out and being like,
I'll be happy with 30.
I'll be happy with 30.
Hit 30.
Because I've actually had rounds in the past where I've got on to like, I don't know, the 16th or the 17th, whatever it is. And I've gone past that 30 point marker and you can feel your body relax. And you're like, well, that's ridiculous. What if you'd set your target to be 32 or 33 or 34? That's been a bit of a revelation for me to stop that thought process, because you will not improve.
I think that's a smart move, and I would encourage that, because ultimately the biggest sign of improvement is if you're scoring more than 36 points, right? Because
why is 30 this magic number that has somehow crept into my head? It should be, well, no, you are an X handicap golfer, hit 36 points because that's what you should be hitting.
I think that might be one of the key takeaways, Tim, but I might even make it the title of this podcast. We'll see what else happens. I like that a lot. Really do. Being happy with 30 points.
Yeah, I think it's not a bad message across the board. Okay, right. My three were consistency of strike with driver. This one kind of goes out the window because don't currently hit a driver, because that's still in the shop. That one snapped, I think, three rounds back after lockdown. Another one which kind of is skewed, I guess, because of it was par five scoring. At the time, it was 5.8 average. I've just had a look. My last 20 rounds, exactly the same. I'm currently scoring at 5.8. Again, no driver. Par fives would typically take that. you know, some days it's going to be a benefit, some days maybe not if my driving accuracy is not the same. But the one key one on there was bringing my average putts down to 32 or under per round. So in 2020 it was 34 putts a round. So had a look, the past 20 rounds I'm averaging 32.26, so I'm only 0.26 away from my target, which is cool. And then last five I'm putting averaging 31.45 putts a round. So where I've been talking about improving my putting and having felt like I've improved the putting, it's the proof is in the pudding. So I've gone from 34 down to 31.45 if we're factoring in the last, you know, and if you're saving 2.5 shots every round, that's quite a good chunk. Given that the swing, kind of the swing changes, the tweaks that I've been working on, second target for me, which is a new target, given the swing changes that I feel like I've embedded in, we're scratching Saturday kind of from the memory just because I felt like tosh. But the previous two rounds before that, I felt a 40 pointer was well within the grasp and there was just too many mental errors. Single figures is probably an obvious one. So I'm off 11.6 at the moment. Single figures as well within touching distance. That's a few 40 point rounds and we're there. And I kind of feel like there are a few rounds in the locker before the end of the year that would get me there. And one that ties in directly to that is I want to play more. I feel like I don't play enough golf. It's a very simple thing, and it's probably like a lot of people say, but I would quite like
to. Didn't last week you play four rounds of golf?
You played loads of golf.
I played two. Yeah, but I still want to play more. I'm not currently playing four rounds a week, so getting out on the course more is a goal. No, it's
me and Tim sat here having had like me with 14 weeks off. Tim's had a 2 month break, and you're sat there going, "I'm not playing enough golf."
Yeah,
I kind of want to do this. Like, middle finger to you.
Yeah, I've played a bit, and I think that the situation's likely to only get worse because.
How many rounds you got booked in for this week?
One, potentially two. We're down to Bournemouth for mate's 30th birthday and then at least one the following weekend, but I'm going to try and get another one in. So,
are you playing in Bournemouth?
We are. I have no idea where, but we're playing Saturday and then, like I said, hangover dependent, possibly playing Sunday as well. Weather dependent as well, because we've some delicate flowers between us five that are potentially going out and we all don't like weather. So we'll see. We're hopefully playing golf.
Nice.
Yep. Go on.
Question. On that last point, you know how you say you don't like playing in basically anything other than the sun? And
yes.
Also how you want to play more golf?
Yeah.
Yeah, you live in England. Why would you maybe try and have a motivational change? Why don't you just try and become the best player in the group in the wet?
Yeah, I could do that, but I mean getting wet, and I don't like getting wet.
You can have a towel, you can shower afterwards. What, you're not going to melt?
You can take a spare pair of socks.
I'll take five pairs of socks. Just need to sort the brolly out. We've got the brolly. It's just sorting it out so it doesn't break on me. Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Ben maybe. Going out in like a full weather wetsuit. Just, I will not get wet. Will not get wet.
Might do. Might consider it, actually. Put a wetsuit on.
Just,
like
just taking a tent out. He just walks along with a tent over him.
Yeah. So I want to play more golf, but I don't the rain.
I figured I've got three opportunities a week, and that's Friday afternoon, evening, Saturday day, Monday.
What if it rains on weekends?
Well, then I might just have to double or triple up the following weekend to get my girl.
Wait, so the real question is, when are you moving to Portugal?
No. Yeah. that would be quite nice.
If next week this podcast feels a little bit different, and because Ben is sunning himself in Portugal, I would not be surprised.
I'm off. Right, chaps, that was wraps up kind of lengthy chat about us kind of this week. That's a quick roundup. Whole pod, and we're off. quick roundup of the pros, because there was quite a bit that went on. Senior Open at Sunningdale, I saw a few flashes on Sky, a few flashes on social media. What a beautiful golf course that place looks like.
Which course were they playing, the old or the new, do you know?
Not a clue. I think it's the old, but you throw me under the bus there.
I didn't see anything and nor watch any of it. Yeah. So
Stephen Dodd pips Miguel Angel and Darren Clark. So it was good to see kind of the two big guys that were recognized from years gone past to another Darren Clark was playing really well, and he was close to relatively close to doing the Open and Senior Open double, you know, in a career, which is quite some feat. Moving over across the pond abroad. Okay, ladies major, the Amundi Evian Championship. Minji Lee comes from 7 shots back on the final day. Seven shots to take Junjun Lee to 6 to a playoff to claim a first major champ in the first playoff hole. 4 birdies in the last 5 holes to take it to the playoff. That's quite a few.
Yeah,
I know you hit, what was it, 2 at the weekend, Chris? 3?
Yeah. Although that was surrounded by bogeys, double bogeys.
Yeah. now 4 in the last 5. Now that is clutch to take it to the playoff. So a stat coming out of this. We've got a lot of stats tonight in regards to the pros because there's some fascinating ones.
I love it.
This now brings the total up to 9. 9 first time winners in a row for the ladies majors, yeah. I believe. Wow. That's something I saw on social media, which is ridiculous, and it shows the depth of competition in ladies golf. And again, another good stat. Minji Lee is Minwoo Lee's brother. Minwoo Lee won the Scottish Open 2 weeks ago. So
amazing.
Good. So there's some good siblings out there in the golf world.
Yeah, well done.
Talented families. It was like we were talking about the Corders the other week.
Corders, yeah.
Definitely. Coming back this side of the pond, somewhere where we've somewhat played, we visited a resort, the Kazoo Open, which was in Wales, in Celtic Manor. Natro Elvira takes the win, beating Justin Harding on the first playoff hole. Again, whenever I see the 2010 course, always makes me want to go back there and play it, because I feel like we did miss out on that, because we played it in monsoon season, and we didn't play the 2010.
Did you see what happened in that final round?
Need a bit of context.
Alvira was he was 6 shots ahead going into day 4.
Oh yeah,
threw away a 6-shot lead. You know, and I watched the highlights earlier, and even watching the highlights, I was like, "What are you doing? Just please stop the bleeding. What are you doing? Like just hitting shots." And I was like, "He's nowhere near the green. Like nowhere near the green on approach shots." And I was like, "You haven't put yourself into this position playing golf like this. Why are you doing this on the final day?" And then the final hole, par 5? Yeah, it was par 5 because he laid up sensible, like didn't need to go for it. Had par and he wins it, puts his approach shot middle of the green, and then misses like a 2-foot putt for par, which would have won. 3 putts, has to go to a playoff. I was just like, this is your chance to have won your first tournament, and you've missed a 2-foot putt for the win, and you're now going to a playoff, which he won in the end. But you kind of go, did you really need to do that to yourself?
just goes to show how difficult it is to win. What we spoke about Darren hitting his first ever tee shot. The nerves on that, I don't think we will ever be able to compare the nerves that you know the pros must feel.
He said in his post-round interview, they were like, what happened? He was like, on those last 2 putts, just super nervous. He was like, that's all it was. He was like, I was just super nervous.
I don't think I've ever seen a golfer look so relieved to have the trophy in his hands. It was just like, oh, thank God. All this was gone. So Justin Harding must have been thinking it as well, thinking, oh, he's blown the lead, then it's mine. Yeah, I've got this wrapped up. Then back across the pond, back out to the States. This is where we've got quite a few.
We've got a lot of ones here, Ben, in this like
a lot of stats here. So Cameron Champ, he's a player that, you know, I've spoken about before because I like the way he absolutely nukes the golf ball off the tee, to be frank. Wins by 2, beating, well, you guessed it, Louis Oosthuizen, obviously, who tied for 2nd with Jonathan Vegas and Louis' good mate, Charles Fortzall. So this is where the interesting stats begin. Cameron Champ, strokes gained putting on the season, 206th. Strokes gained putting on the week, 1st. Wow. Number 1, numero uno. So it just goes to show, clearly the game is there. All he needs is to get his putting in line and he can contend. Admittedly, this wasn't a stacked field, but with the length he has off the tee, the accuracy he has, clearly it's there if he gets the putting on. Go. Right, Ricky Fowler, potentially one of the most unusual stats that I've ever seen. Chris, you brought it to my attention, and I went and started to look back and basically had how many rounds did those stats cover? How many tournaments is that? So for those that didn't see it, so since the start of the PGA Championship, which was 2 months ago, Ricky Fowler's played in 5 tournaments. In that time, he's played 22 rounds of golf. That's a lot of golf. All right, so that's a good enough pool to generate these stats from. Here's plus 12.05 strokes gained when he's wearing his sunglasses. But without the glasses, he's lost 17.4 shots.
So this isn't even like... So wait, pause. So this isn't even like prescription. This is literally just him wearing sunglasses.
These are sunglasses. These are...
I assumed he'd had like eye issues or something.
No.
Not this was literally just he's wearing sunglasses and it's fucking up his butting.
No, it's sunglasses. It's almost like Cyclops from the X-Men. Once he's got the glasses on, he is...
Comparison. Okay.
You take the glasses off. No, he's done. Sorry, he's done. 17.4 shots. What's that? That's like a 25 shot swing. The difference in wearing glasses.
To be fair, his putting has been getting worse. I don't know if it's been getting worse, but it feels like it's not been strong this year. Like normally you go Ricky putting, you can putt. But yeah, when you say 12, so he's lost 12 strokes on the field. Putting.
No. Gained 12 strokes on the field in general. Strokes gained general, not putting. This is just strokes gained in general. So strokes gained, he's plus 12.05. So he's beating the field by 12 shots when he's wearing his glasses. He's losing.
Oh, he's better. I thought it was worse.
No.
I think he's better. Yeah. He's losing it. This is where I mean. It's almost like he puts the glasses on. He's got superpowers. If you're his coach and you've seen those stats, you're like, keep the glasses on. Don't care. You keep your glasses on. Well, we find some set of glasses that are clear and wear them.
Sorry, maybe I'll hit it the other way around. So he's actually playing way better now that he's got his sunglasses.
Yeah, basically.
So does this mean that, Ben, you're going to wear your sunglasses more and more now?
Every round. Yeah, right. I don't think it will translate.
Thunder, lightning, pouring down the rain. Ben's out there with his sunglasses on.
There you go. I'll be there in my wetsuit with my sunglasses on. I've got that. Another... not amusing stat, but pretty flipping excellent stat. I don't know whether you saw it. Keith Mitchell started Saturday's round 7 consecutive birdies. Went out on Saturday, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, bang, all of them birdies straight in. It made me think, I think my personal best is 2. And I thought I was, lights out at the time. I thought I was the man going in, 2 birdies in a row. 7's quite a few.
I'd take... 2 pars in a row, if I'm honest with you. I'm at that stage of my game right now.
I mean, imagine what he must have felt like stepping onto 8T. He must have felt like $1 million. He must have felt.
Yeah, but do you, or do you start panicking? Like, don't break the trend. don't screw this up.
Maybe. I mean, he didn't win, so I guess there's an element of that probably. But I know he did it quite well. And I've just touched upon it. Louis did take another second. This is the final stat from this event. In Louis Oosthuizen's last 7 events, all right, bear in mind he's not won in this time. He's got a lot of second places. He's earned $4.3 million in prize money. He's not come first. Is that? I saw that. And I was like, that's staggering. That's a career for most people. And in 7 events that he's not won, it's $4.3 million. Right. Well, anything to add from the pro circuit this week, chaps? All good.
Don't think so.
Right, we're going to quickly touch upon DraftKings because it was a bit of a shambolic show from all the lads this week. Myself, I had 3 miscuts, including my big banker, break the bank player, go and get Dustin Johnson. Yeah, obviously missed the cut. Brilliant. Well done, pal. 3 miscuts for me. Tim had 4 miscuts. Christopher had 4 missed cuts.
No, me and you didn't. Me and you, I had 3 missed cuts and then Lebioda withdrew on the Saturday.
Okay.
Haven't looked at it, but he was playing some really good golf as well.
Cool. So I factored in Lebioda into my missed cut. So I was actually kind of watching and looking at the score thinking, oh shit, Cameron Tregale is playing really well. He was leading. All he had to do was hold it together, probably just par his way out. Yeah. But thankfully he didn't. Unfortunately for him.
I had him, obviously he was in my team and I was like, at one point I was like, Ben's team is finished. 0 holes left to play. I think I had 18 holes left. I was like, and I was 10 points behind. And I was like, Tringali, he's 1 under. He'd gone 1 over, got it back to 1 under. And I was like, he's got 6 holes left. This can't go wrong. I've won it. No troubles. Log into DraftKings about an hour and a half later. I'm like, +3? Tringali, what the fuck happened? And I've not won. I've in fact lost by 10 points.
I appreciate the nice gift, Mr. Wright. So for me this week, I took the win. Chris came second. Cameron Tringale. So Chris's points train continues. And then unfortunately, Timbo comes last. So where does this leave us? I have jumped out into the lead on 38 points, Tim on 36, and Chris is still a long, long, long way behind on 19 points. But we'll let him be happy with his 1 point. Yeah. Right, gentlemen, kind of moving on, but we'll actually kind of be staying with the pros. This is something which is obviously it's in the news at the moment because it's absolutely flipping huge. Anyone who has BBC will well and truly know that the Olympics is going on at the moment. There's something that I can't remember who posed the question in the group the other day, but it very much came immediately. It was like, right, pause that. We're going to use that. Let's talk about this on the podcast and we'll go through it then instead of in the group chat. Yeah. I will precursor this by saying that big news broke this weekend. Both John Rahm and Bryson have had to pull out due to positive COVID tests. Rahm testing positive twice in 2 months.
That's not great.
I don't really know what that means as well, whether that just showcases inconsistencies in testing, but that's way too political. We're not going to go down that route. And Patrick Reed, everyone's favorite golfer, is replacing everyone else's favorite golfer, Bryson DeChambeau, for Team USA. Now, kind of before I pose the question, there's a couple of little stats about it. Because of that, only 3 of the world's top 10 are at the Olympics. Only 7 of the top 20 are playing. Admittedly, this is due to a lot of the Americans fill those spots and they can only have a certain number of players in those teams. But still.
Let the Americans fill up 18 of the top 20.
Yeah. You know, with all of this in mind, and given how amazing golf has been across the whole year, really, where does Olympic golf rank in terms of importance with the players? Do we think it really matters to them? Timothy, I'm going to come to you first.
It's a really good question because I can't, obviously I can't speak on behalf of the players of how much it genuinely matters to them, because obviously publicly they'll all come out and say, yeah, I'm here to win. I'm here to win. Let's address the elephant in the room on this one, which is that when it comes to most people that are into golf, look, the Olympics, it simply right now does not mean as much as the majors. It just doesn't. So let's qualify that one straight off the bat. If you two disagree and tell me that I'm being pig-headed, then let me know. But I'm pretty sure you don't. I'm pretty sure we're all in agreement on this one. But the flip side of that is it gives you an opportunity you don't normally get to play for your country.
Yeah.
Now, that's an interesting one when it comes down to an individual sport, because when it's an individual sport, I've always thought that it's all about you as the individual and nothing else and nobody else. I think if you look at the really, really successful individual sports like tennis, athletics, Formula One, actually athletics, bad example, forget that one. But generally speaking, if you feel like the most successful individuals, I mean, let's consider Tiger as an example. It is just solely about the individual. Now, the flip side of that is there are always going to be, I think, certain golfers / nationalities for whom that's not the case. And the national pride is absolutely mega. And that's why I think the actual the two British lads at these Olympics are really, really good shouts for the actual gold, because I think someone like Tommy, I think, probably gets an extra bit of drive, focus, motivation because he's representing Great Britain. I've got nothing to back that up on. I've got no stats or anything to back that up on. But I just get a sense of that's where it takes on a really interesting, unique angle. And it may be.
So I'm going to throw a question at you then.
Yeah.
Because of that, are we completely writing off Rory McIlroy after his statement this week of being like, well, I'm not really patriotic, but it feels like it's the right thing to do?
Yeah. That was an interesting statement, wasn't it? He's basically said, I'm not that bothered about representing my country, but it's the right. Didn't he say it was the right thing to do for golf, or was it the right thing to do for? I can't remember what it was, but And I don't disagree that it's the right thing to do for golf, but I think you should want to be there. And if you don't want to be there, yeah, don't go, for me.
Well, especially because the places that a nation can give are capped. So generally, yeah, you can only have a maximum of 4 people per nation within the tournament. But basically, the way it's going to go is, generally, most nations, you're talking about contributing two players, your highest ranked 2 players, really, yeah, genuinely. Oh. I think this tournament's kind of cool, but give that spot up to, you know, other Irish golfers. Now, where I get to on this one, and why I started off by saying, let's address the elephant in the room, about how it simply at the moment, let us not forget that golf was only reinstated in the last Olympics to the Olympics. So at the moment, it hasn't even had a chance to really figure out what it's gonna be. But if golf considers that right now this doesn't have the same status, let's say, and it sounds like I'm being harsh, but I think it's true, it doesn't have the same status in the game as the majors do, then would it not be good for golf to hold the event for like under 24s or 23s or 22s or 21-year-olds?
Oh, okay.
Make it a bit like a futures thing.
I had a different idea, but okay. Yeah, I like that idea.
I just wonder whether you'd lose a lot of, and I'll use the word casual, a lot of casual golf fans that will watch it because they're there to watch a Rory McIlroy play. Or,
well, I think the Olympics a gold medal is you're the best in the world.
That exactly. That's where I
think if you're under 23, sure, you're getting opportunity here, but you then, I mean, unless you're Colin Morikawa or, you know, who would legitimately be potentially one of the best in the world winning gold medal, I don't think you should you be able to win a gold medal if you were not legitimately the best in the world?
Because I'd be willing to put money on it that Justin Rose has that gold medal sat up on the mantelpiece next to the
major
trophy. No doubt. I'm just thinking about...
I think obviously, for Siwoo Kim and Sungjae Im, this is what the Olympics means to them. They're taking it very seriously because they would like to avoid military service for their country. So for them, it's huge. As I said, we can't see what it means. We can't say what it means for the pros. I don't think I watched a minute of the Olympics golf last time. I actually will watch this one.
This is exactly what I was going to say. Sorry, just to jump in really, really quickly, Chris. Ben, you said like a couple of moments ago about how is that going to make the casual sports fan watch the golf if the top names aren't there? I'm going to go out on a limb and be really, really, really honest about what I think. I think if you are a casual sports fan, you're not going to watch the golf at the Olympics.
No.
Interesting. Because there's so much that's going on around all year long.
If you're not into golf, are you going to settle down and watch a 4-hour round when there is the athletics going on, when there's swimming going on, blah, blah, blah? So I don't think you need to worry about that. In fact, I'd flip it around and say the people that are going to watch the golf are more likely to watch the golf in isolation and not very much of the rest of the Olympics because they're probably the really, really keen golf fans, which is why I think there's something in that as well. There might be some enjoyment to be had of using it as a futures style event.
Can I give you my idea on this?
Sure.
That I also, you've not changed the format, you've changed the team selection. I would suggest a change in format. Okay. So Tim, you mentioned it. You're like, you get 2 to 4 picks for your country, right? And that's it. Why are they playing an individual event? I was like, play team event.
Yeah, yeah.
Do a team event. Do 2v2s or 4, you know, teams of 4 or whatever.
Everyone
loves coming up as a team because playing as a team, and you play knockout. Like you play, like, you know, in hockey, they have the group stage, the knockouts, the final. Do that. Play that. Play 6 rounds or whatever it is over the course of the 2 weeks. Doesn't have to be 4 days straight. And be there competing. So you have, you know, South Korea versus England. You have France. You have, yeah, each country like having a team.
Oh, can I add something to that?
But you know that I love team events. So this is where I was always going to go. And yes, of course, you can add something.
So going back down this wormhole of casual sports fans getting into it.
Yeah.
So you could, this might be a stupid idea. So again, I'm just throwing it out there because it's literally just come into my head. And also because I've written it down for something else. If you know that this is, there's part of me think, right, if you're the golf authorities and you think, right, this is an opportunity to get more exposure to golf, people that aren't necessarily into golf. As I say, I think if you're a casual sports fan, expecting someone to watch 4 hours of golf, I think that's quite punchy, expecting someone to do that. Firstly, I think Chris's idea is a great one in that you make a national team knockout. This might be blasphemous. Do you change the format and have smaller number of holes?
I've also written this down for a later topic later on in this podcast. I did think about this when I was talking about my change in format. I don't disagree. That's a way to get more people into it. I don't think you could do that for Olympic gold, bronze, silver medals. Yeah, that's
probably true.
I don't disagree with you, but I just don't think it's you could change it that much, if that makes sense.
The golf world
is very, very traditional, right? We can't just make major changes, but the only change I was making go for teams and do knockout.
I'm surprised that they haven't gone for teams. It does make more sense because
I mean one round, it's one round max. France v England, done. Whoever wins, you're out. Whoever wins you through, whoever loses, you're out.
It's Great Britain in the Olympics, but okay.
Sure, sorry, yeah, Great Britain and Ireland. Sorry, lots of commentators making that error this week. Not bad. France versus Germany. There you go. That's safe.
I think you'd then naturally drag along a few more casual fans as well because you would have that affinity, like we saw in the Euros with the football. Yeah. People who have no interest in football because England are doing well at a major tournament. Everyone's like, right, we'll get into it. And I think if we had that team aspect, because they are. As much as they are playing for England, Tommy Fleetwood is still going as Tommy Fleetwood.
Still not playing for England.
For Great Britain, shit. Oh, brilliant.
Great way to isolate all of our Welsh and Scottish power.
God, shit. And
We're sorry.
My point was going to be Tommy Fleetwood still going for Tommy Fleetwood, first and foremost. And, ultimately his success will then mean Great Britain succeed, right? So I think making it a team event would definitely make me more interested in it. Here's a question which I wrote down. Olympic gold, one major or world number one? Where do you think they sit in terms of a pros?
Major, world number one, Olympic gold.
Easy.
I mean, that is something that I think gets thrown at Westy all the time, isn't it? That he's not won a major, but he's responds with, world number one. It's not quite the same, is it? But I suppose, Olympic gold, get it. Right, another question for this. Playing for team event, Ryder Cup, President's Cup, Olympics. We still saying Olympics is right down the bottom there. I know in Europe, we obviously don't play a President's Cup. That's America versus rest of the world. And I know it's difficult to say from an American perspective because none of us are American. But where do you think the Americans sit? Because they're crazy patriotic. A lot more than probably what we are in the UK anyway. And I would love to know kind of where you guys think they sit with that.
That's right. It's Ryder Cup if you're European. I don't know how it sits in the American psyche compared to the other ones they play. I suspect I know the answer, but I don't want to. Well, I suspect it's the same with them, basically, that the Ryder Cup from an international team event is the pinnacle. Like to go to a Ryder Cup, to be on if you're European, for example, to be in a European Ryder Cup team that goes to the States and wins, that's the top when it comes to team events. And to be honest, a massive point in your career. I mean,
well, at the end of the day, people will talk about Ian Poulter for the next 50 to 100 years. As a pro, You would say he's had a good career, but he's not pulled up trees and won tournament left, right, and centre, is he?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, this is something that I also wrote down because I'm like, right, the Olympics, what are they contending with? Why is golf not such a, the Olympics such a big thing? And here's kind of just some of the big golf events, and correct me if I've missed a few. So you've got the four majors, you've got the Ryder Cup, you've got the President's Cup, you've got four WGCs a year, you've got the Players, and then you've also got the FedEx Cup or the race in Dubai.
Yeah.
You know, that, particularly when you're talking $10 million to the winner of the FedEx Cup, all the, you know, it's north of $2 million for the Players. And then when you win the Olympic gold, you don't get anything. Now, I'm not saying that they should be getting paid, because it is ultimately for your nation, but I think that's where the Players are.
You know, I think there's a few things there, right? So let's very quickly unpack that. Already a stacked schedule. If you know any of the top players, oh, can you just squeeze in an extra event? No, like physically very, very difficult to do. Then when you say, oh, you're actually turning, I know they're not because there's no tournaments on this week, but you'd be potentially turning down a chance to win $2 million, right? And you're selling me this because of gold medal? Yeah. And I get it. Like
And sorry to butt in, look at John Rahm, DeChambeau at the moment, potential testing positive. You're going outside of the country. You were traveling to a completely different time zone on the other side of the world. You'll be jet lagged, and that may affect you in the coming weeks.
But I think there's two sides to this, right? And golf is relatively new. Well, obviously very new in terms of the Olympics. So, you know, back in last Olympics. And I think what the Olympics does is showcases sports and athletes that we don't see on a week-to-week basis. A lot of the Olympics is athletes that are training for this 1 week period every 4 years, and unless you're an avid athletics fan, or and you're watching the Diamond League, whatever it's called, I don't know if that's accurate at the moment, but you're not seeing those athletes week in, week out. You're seeing them on the world stage once every 4 years, and it does an unbelievable job of showcasing them. Unbelievable job of showcasing them for the sports, like maybe basketball, maybe less so, you know, golf, who those players are being seen week in, week out, earning millions potentially. I just think it, from a consumer, from watching the Olympics, it has a slightly different effect. Do you know what I mean? Because it's not like, oh, I haven't seen this person. Where's Max Whitlock been for the last 4 years? All of a sudden he comes in and you're like, this dude's a hero. Like, this guy's unbelievable. Whereas you're like, yeah, well, I've seen Tommy Fleetwood every week.
Yeah. It's something that I came to a conclusion myself, and I wouldn't be that upset, as big a golf fan as I am, to see the major year-round sports that we see on our TV screens all year round. I wouldn't be that upset to see them dropped. Now, we're talking sports like football, rugby, basketball, golf, because I kind of feel like you're always going to have a slight struggle to generate interest and enthusiasm in that, because these are seasonal sports which are played year-round. The Olympics, for me, you know, I've been watching, I would pick I would probably pick the athletics over the golf, or you know, road cycling over the golf, or something that's a little bit more niche and really focused around them being at their peak for the Olympics versus something that I watch every week. And I think the same goes across the board for every sport. If we're trying to, you know, if we're thinking about, you know, sports that are at the Olympics, the ones where we are talking about, you know, pure thoroughbred Olympic sports, they deserve their place on the mantelpiece. And that's where I kind of feel like, yeah, it's nice to have golf there, but my overriding thought is I wouldn't be that upset to not see it.
I think it's still the classic professional versus amateur, isn't it? And I think that's always going to be a battle they struggle with in the Olympics. Yeah.
Cool. Tim, any final thoughts?
Only just to kind of state the obvious, it's a really tough nut to crack to get it really, really perfect, because there's definitely something in it, in, you know, bringing golf to more people and bringing more people into the sport, and changing perceptions of it is also really, really important. The only other thing I was going to throw out there, and this is something I've been thinking about, and it may not actually be very interesting to you guys, but it's to me. If you're let's take Team GB as an example. If you're a Nike athlete, and you then represent Team GB, who are supplied by Adidas, do you have to wear Adidas clobber head to toe when you're in Team GB? So basically, Team GB's representatives are Casey and Fleetwood, unless I'm mistaken.
Yeah, both Nike players.
So they, what, are they just going to be head-to-toe Adidas for the next... It starts this week.
I would imagine clothing, yes, but footwear, no, would be my guess.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Because sprinters
are getting paid. I mean, what do you? I mean, not that they get paid by the event, but you'd be a bit miffed, wouldn't you, if you're like Nike? Well, be like, that's two of our athletes who are not going to be wearing our gears.
Yeah, let's discuss this next week. We'll see the outcome, won't we? What are they going to be wearing?
I have no idea what they're going to be dressed in. I was trying to think about last time, but it's not, because obviously Justin Rose is an Adidas. It was Adidas at the time anyway. Mm. But
it's a good question, Timbo. These are the deep questions that we should be asking.
we started off asking the big one about what's the role of golf in the Olympics. Now we're asking, what happens?
What are they going to be wearing?
Can you wear Nike shoes?
Can I wear my Air Jordans?
I swear you listeners come for the good quality questions, the good good quality content. Right, guys, actually, to be fair, listeners, it'd be interesting to find out your views in the Olympics. Will you be tuning in, or would you tune in probably like I'm going to be doing to other events? Like, I'm not going to lie, I've been loving watching the judo and the taekwondo the last couple of days. I would probably rather tune into those than the golf, as big a golf fan as I am. So be interested to see people's thoughts, kind of what they thought about Rory's comments, who they fancy to win as well, actually.
The event that we were watching yesterday, Noah was absolutely loving it. For the listeners here, Noah is my 19-month-old kid, literally just standing at the TV going, wow! that's one of his few words that he's got. Watching Simone Biles, I was like, you're right. She actually is wow. Like, you can say that. She is actually incredible. She flies.
It's serious athlete.
Yeah.
One thing to say before I can't believe I didn't say this. I should have actually said this last week on the pod. I had a very, very exciting moment the other weekend. So it was all COVID restrictions having now been eased, I've been able to see more of my family than I would do normally. So spent a bit more time with my young nephews, who were all under the age of two. I've got three nephews, and two of them, I think I helped them take their first putts ever in golf.
Amazing. I love that.
That is excellent.
I was so happy with it. I was like, this is going to be a seminal moment, because
that's amazing.
In the future, when one of these definitely grows up to be a world champion, major winning golfer, I'm going to get the plaudits for being, I was there at the start. Yeah. Sorry.
Hey, well,
just a slight bit of, I don't know, unimportant news for 99.9% of people listening to the podcast, but I just thought I'd share that with you.
I reckon there's a lot of people that will be able to relate to their kid taking their first golf swing or putt or whatever. I think that's good.
Has Noah had a whack yet?
No, I mean he's pulled that. Do you remember we got the old clubs for one of the episodes? He drags them around light swinging, but I need to get him an actual mini set, and I might even do that now as we hang up on the podcast.
Yeah, I think it's about time.
He's such an aggressive little kid. Like, he just runs around whacking stuff. Like, if I get him golf clubs, there might not be anything left in this house. Like, vases get broken. Like, he runs around like a lunatic.
If that's the case, it's not going to be long before he's hitting it further than you.
I mean, no doubt. I
knew that was coming.
Oh, brilliant. Great gag. Right, chaps, anything more to add this week?
No.
No, I'm just excited for the bit that we're going to do now next week.
Yeah.
So am I, because I've got some lovely notes for that one. Guys, thank you ever so much for tuning in. Enjoy the golf if you end up watching the golf this weekend. If not, enjoy the rest of the Olympics. And be sure to check back in next week to hear us talk about Tommy Fleetwood's gears and Paul Casey's. That's all for me for now. Anything more, boys?
Nope.
All from me.
See you later, guys.
Catch you later.
Thank you ever so much for listening. If you did love the show, please do remember to tell a friend about Slice of Golf. This episode is brought to you by both Sunday Red Golf and Tour Champ. Sunday Red Golf is a golf club for you, your friends, the hackers, just about everyone. If you want to join our club, head over to sundayredgolf.co.uk now to find out more about our golf club. And this show is also brought to you by Tour Champ. Tour Champ is a place for you to create your very own golf league for you and your pals. And you can do so for free at tourchamp.co.